coming up on today's program.
I've heard from people in the Miami Valley for years, since the old hospital was closed, that we need a mental health facility where people can go in the Miami Valley. You know, we have it in other parts of the state, but you shouldn't have to go to Cincinnati, you shouldn't have to go to Toledo.
What to do with the former Hera Arena site? I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. As always, thanks for sharing your weekend with WISO. That story coming up later in the program. Up first, a series debut. Together with StoryCorps, WISO invited the community to participate in One Small Step and connect with someone in the region they had never met before to talk about life in America in the present moment. Beginning this week and airing Wednesdays and Sundays for the next several weeks, we'll meet the participants and hear excerpts from their conversations. First up is Amy Hart of Fairborn and Emily Anderson of Troy.
Amy, what made you want to have this conversation today?
I saw a thing about it on Facebook, and it just looked like a really interesting concept, you know, getting complete strangers together to talk about views and opinions. I think people are more alike than they are different.
I absolutely agree. We're not communicating as well, despite like how many ways there are to communicate.
Yep.
So I was really excited to have the opportunity to meet somebody and have a conversation really is the biggest thing. So I have to agree. Well, this is a good question. Have you ever felt patriotic or unpatriotic?
Oh, goodness. Wow, that's kind of a loaded question.
Yeah, isn't it?
Because so often patriotism is associated with supporting the government, and I definitely am not a fan of our government in general.
Yeah.
Both parties, mm-hmm. because I think they're all garbage. Really, I mean, I couldn't even tell you the last time I saw a decent, halfway decent politician. But I think what we say we stand for, mm-hmm. and what we have historically stood for, mm-hmm. I think is incredible. Mm-hmm. I think we've gotten away from that, mm-hmm. with the we bring too much politics into it and not enough people. And then of course, you know, leadership on both sides of the aisle.
Mm-hmm.
haven't done a great job at that either. I always joke that I think all the congressmen, after they get done with session, they're back in some back room all sharing a scotch and soda and mm-hmm. laughing at the American people. You know, mm-hmm. I think there's less division in Congress than we see on the screen. But I wish the country could get back to what it was, but not in all ways. I mean, right. Obviously, we have our dark periods of history, too, and
sure.
we need to move forward on other things. So I don't know if that makes me a patriot. I'm not ready to move to another country yet.
Right.
I think this country needs work, but I think it takes people like us to work on it.
Absolutely.
To make it better, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, what I view as patriotic, I think that what we're doing here is extremely patriotic, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I read something recently or saw something recently that was talking about how there's sort of this American aesthetic, you know, like the red, white, and blue. But that's not exact. That's more of an aesthetic. That's not actually being patriotic. I think what being patriotic is taking care of your neighbor. It's, mm-hmm. it's you know, all of those things that we were supposed to be founded on, even though, like you said, we have some really dark times in our past and dark history that we can't ignore. But this is a beautiful country with beautiful people, and I'm not in any hurry to leave. I'm in a big hurry to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
That was Emily Anderson and Amy Hart in conversation. One Small Step with WISO is produced by the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WISO. The series is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and presented by the Charles F. Kettering Foundation. The 25th Winter Olympics are fast approaching. The games will take place at several venues around northeast Italy. That includes the sport of curling, where players slide stones on a sheet of ice toward the house or target area. It's one of the fastest growing sports in the U.S., and one local organization is doing their part to spread the love. I was happy to recently spend time with them. Curling's popularity has been on the rise since it was reintroduced as an Olympic sport in 1998. And since 2010, Curl Troy has been teaching local residents all about it. It's a frigid night at the Five Rivers Metro Park Ice Rink where I meet Brian Ressler, president of the local nonprofit, to talk about their mission of education.
Our goal is to try to introduce this sport to the community and kind of let everybody know that it's sort of welcoming for everybody. It's an incredibly adaptive sport.
We start with a little curling 101.
It's a game played on the ice, two teams of four players, and their goal is to slide 16 very large rocks from one end of the ice to the other, and closest to the center of the target called a house scores the point, and you go back and forth in different ends. It's kind of like an inning in baseball until the very end, and then whoever has the most points at the end of all six or eight or ten ends wins the game.
As with a lot of sports, muscle memory plays a key role in skill development. But Ressler says curling is pretty easy to pick up. We put that to the test when he offers me a short lesson in launching the curling stones. That action is called the delivery.
All right. I'll give you the same kind of brief instruction that I give. Actually, let's not use this right now. That I give everybody.
Okay.
Are you right-handed or left-handed?
Right-handed.
Okay. So we're going to start with your right foot on the left side of the hack here.
Okay.
So this right here is called a slider. If you have curling shoes, it's just right on the bottom of your shoe.
Okay.
But these are just for everybody else. Yeah. On the bottom here, this is all Teflon.
Okay.
So it's very slippery. So it's very important that this is the last thing that you step on, like when you get ready to go here. So I'll just leave that turned over. You're going to step here. You're going to crouch down. You won't usually ever use two stones, but just to start,
okay.
Do that. All right. We'll get this turned over.
Ressler demonstrates the launch first, kneeling down with hands gripping the curling stones. He uses one leg to push off the hack, similar to a track sprinter's starting block.
You're going to push this one forward, almost like you're doing like a lunge in motion. So you're going to hips up, push off with this leg, and this one goes forward.
The push off is smooth, and Ressler travels 10 to 15 feet down the ice rink.
When you're done, step off of this immediately.
Okay.
And then come on back.
Okay.
Don't forget it's there because you'll step on it.
Yeah.
I'll leave that this way. Just watch it.
Okay.
In competition, Ressler would have propelled himself as close to the release line as possible before sending the stone sliding far down the rink. Next, it's my turn. Stepping into the hack, it takes a minute for my brain to process and execute the instructions I've been given. Finally, under the watchful eyes of several nearby players, I launch myself forward on the ice.
Yeah, yes, that was it.
Well,
that's it. That was exactly right.
Get off of me.
No, that was great. Seriously, it was. First time, absolutely.
Okay.
My leg.
With no muscle memory to work with, I manage a meager slide of 3 to 4 feet. Not far, but I'm grateful for staying upright. Tonight, Curl Troy members are gathering for a league playoff tournament. One of them is John Bergmeier, a former coach and play-by-play announcer for the Wright State Raiders. Bergmeier heard about the curling league from a group of longtime friends who wanted to join.
And it just so happened, I was in Finland the winter before that, and I was introduced to curling by the Finland Olympic team when I was over there for business and work. So it was really cool that he mentioned that. Like, hey, I'm probably the only one out of you guys that actually curled before. And we didn't know anything about it. You see it on the Olympics, right? And everybody's trying to figure out what do you have to do in curling? What's the object of the game? So we came down first year. This is our fifth year down here. Same group of guys, and we just have fun. It's just a great time.
Curling events are taking place in Dayton and Springfield throughout the year, and they've got a watch party scheduled at Southern Ohio Brewing for the Olympic gold medal match coming in February. Curl Troy is also in search of a place to call home, a venue solely dedicated to the sport, and preferably one indoors. But for now, they're just happy to be out on the ice playing the sport they love. For WISO, I'm Jerry Kenney. You can see photos of my Icelandic expedition on our website at WISO.org. Up next on WISO Weekend, the state of Ohio owns the former Hera Arena site. Last November, it bought the land from a private owner for more than $3.3 million. The plan is to build a new public mental health center on this site. However, the city of Trotwood and some residents want something different there. WISO's Catherine Mobley has the story.
The site that housed the former Hare Arena is about 133 acres on Shiloh Springs Road, right at Wolf Road. 91 acres are in Trotwood. 42 acres are in Harrison Township. Governor Mike DeWine says the old Hare Arena site has long needed development and believes this project will best serve the community's need.
I've heard from people in the Miami Valley for years, since the old hospital was closed, that we need a mental health facility where people can go in the Miami Valley. You know, we have it in other parts of the state, but you shouldn't have to go to Cincinnati, you shouldn't have to go to Toledo.
While Trotwood Mayor Yvette Page agrees with Devine that mental health services are needed in the Miami Valley, she says the city does not want it at the former Hare Arena site.
We're not saying no to the government. In fact, we would be crazy not to accept it. But it's just like anything. If you come into someone's home or house, you don't rearrange your furniture. You don't tell them what to put, where it goes. You ask them. You include them. You say we're coming. What can we do to work collaborative together? That's all we're asking.
Page says city leaders have identified four other sites they believe are better suited. Trotwood resident Cynthia Bass agrees with the mayor, citing safety concerns for seniors and children. Nearby the former Hare Arena site, there's a senior center and condos.
And like I said, you have elderly that's already living, and then you have a community of condos. That's just not safe. I don't think that's wise.
Resident Jack Jackson prefers a development that will generate new jobs.
I'm in favor of something being put there, you know, not necessarily a mental health facility, but something more attached to retail, perhaps.
According to the state's proposal, the new treatment center will create about 500 new jobs and generate an annual payroll of $126 million. Economic growth, Harrison Township's Nathan Edwards says, both communities need.
We've already had housing developers reach out to us wanting to build new single-family homes near the site in anticipation of these new jobs. New rooftops means new amenities.
Edwards is the township's communications and economic development manager. He says the new treatment center will stabilize patients who are referred to the facility by either a doctor, a hospital, or the court system.
These are folks in acute psychiatric crisis. These are mothers with severe postpartum depression. These are elderly patients with complex mental health needs, patients with different disorders that are having an impact on their day-to-day life.
According to Edwards, these patients will be transported to the facility to get treatment and transported once they are released, reducing the chance of clients wandering the neighborhood. DeWine says the proposed treatment center is part of a larger statewide effort.
This is part of our overall goals and plans to build a mental health system in the state of Ohio that serves every part of the state and serves every community. We can't do it without doing it in the Miami Valley.
The proposed center would be 270,000 square feet and completed by 2030. Meanwhile, Trotwood Mayor Page says her constituents have a different vision for the old Hare Arena site.
They want a mixed use and homes and development like that for small entrepreneurs, and that's what we want to do. And until they turn that dirt, I'm going to stick to what God has planned for that area.
Page welcomes state leaders to come to Trotwood for a public information meeting with residents. No date has been set. Reporting for WYSO News, I'm Catherine Mobley.
The Food and Cultural Festival runs February 2nd through the 7th at the University of Dayton. Local and national speakers will dig into topics related to food, culture, and the humanities. WYSO's Shea Frank reports.
UD's Food and Culture Fest will kick off with conversations with local culinary artists on Monday at the Roger Glass Center. A panel focusing on food growth, distribution, and access will take place on Tuesday with representatives from the Hall Hunger Initiative, BIPOC Food and Farming Network, the 6888 Incubator, and more. That's according to Sam Dorf. He serves as the alumni chair in the humanities at UD.
Thinking about what hunger is from a philosophical perspective, right? Or insecurity, why that exists in the world, right? These are just as critical as eating, right? And so I can't imagine life without the humanities, and I can't imagine life without food.
The event's keynote speaker, Michael Twitty, will dive deeper into the history, myths, and controversies involving Southern food, race, and identity on Thursday. The events are free, aside from three ticketed performances by the Dayton Opera on Friday and Saturday. Kathleen Clausen is artistic director for the Dayton Opera. She says they will showcase two works titled The Cook-Off and Bon Appetit.
The stage must reflect the community and the world. So these pieces absolutely do that. I'd like to think that everybody can imagine themselves, see themselves through the characters that will be on stage.
Dorf says these events have been designed to foster conversations and partnerships within the community surrounding food and storytelling.
It brings together three of my favorite things: food, telling human stories, and even a little bit of music. I like opera. What can I say?
For WYSO News, I'm Shay Frank.
You're listening to WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks so much for sharing your weekends with WYSO. Up next, our bulletin board series highlights small local businesses and their owners. Today, we meet a jewelry maker whose business card we found on the bulletin board at Wheatpenny Dayton.
Hello.
Hi, Maggie.
Hey, welcome in. This is Maple. She might get a bowl in your business.
Oh, that's all right.
Maggie Del Noche has been places, moving across the country a few times before landing for good in Dayton. And along the way, she's had a few jobs.
So I worked at like Laura's Cookies, and then I worked at Ghost Light Coffee, and I've worked at multiple jewelry stores in the area. Had another job briefly, and then I started immediately working at Jared's.
Del Noche says some of those jobs were to pay the bills, but other jobs were in the industry she lives for: jewelry design and metalsmithing.
There's something about jewelry. It's an art piece that you carry around with you everywhere. And like, especially being a designer, it's kind of like being an architect. Like, you want to design something that lasts, something that you won't have to worry about, you know, falling apart later down the line. And so many designs nowadays do. Like, everyone wants like these certain styles, and companies are more than happy to supply them, but they're not necessarily built to last. These aren't designs that are meant to be family heirlooms. And so that's what I kind of treasure about it, is informing people, educating people, and then designing pieces for them that I know won't fall apart on them.
Del Noche is the founder of Olivine and Ivory, the business she runs out of her home in Belmont. The name is a nod to the usually olive green mineral, olivine. The mineral is in the peridot family of gemstones. Peridots are a common ingredient of the Earth's composition, but they are the only gemstone to also be found in meteorites. As for the inclusion of ivory in the business name, there's a clue in one of the few jewelry pieces Maggie is wearing. She tells me it was actually a 1940s Cracker Jack prize. An elephant with a little compass in the center, Maggie used her skills to rework the piece into a necklace.
I went to Cambodia and I worked with elephants, and I kind of wanted something to represent travel. So I was searching on Etsy and I found this little charm, and it's got historical meaning. It's sentimental. It's elephants. It's got a compass for travel. So it's kind of been what I've worn every day since that trip in 2015. And the elephants are kind of behind my logo as well. If you look at it, the O and the and symbol and the I form into an elephant head, which a lot of people don't realize.
Del Noche introduces me to the craft of jewelry making by taking me to a room in her home that serves as her workshop.
This is a pretty cool workbench.
Yeah, it's actually an old watchmaker's bench, and there's actually carvings in it from times and dates and history that they carved into it. It says 82764 Paul, which I guess was regarding the Beatles. And then somewhere on here, there's actually the date that Kennedy was shot, I think.
Really?
Yeah, and they carved it into the bench. So it's been pretty cool to like look up these dates.
On the desk are the tools of Maggie's trade: pliers, cutters, soldering tool.
All right, so I prepped this little three-legged cat pin yesterday. So I cut out the most intricate part, and so all I have left is the leg here. So I'm going to saw that out here in a moment, and then I'll file it, and then we'll solder it together.
Demonstrating her work, Maggie files on the tiny three-legged cat.
All right, idea because I still need to do a bit of work to this, but let me fire up the torch. Oh, need to adjust the oxygen. So that's the sound. All these little bits you see here are pieces of silver solder. There's medium and there's easy. And then there's also hard, but I don't really work with that with how tiny the pieces get. And they all have different melting points.
Do you ever struggle with pieces that maybe just can't get right or can't get the metal to do what you need it to do?
Oh, 100%. I can only get so tiny with where I can file, and so that means I either have to saw extremely carefully so that way filing can be avoided, or sometimes I have to get a little bit creative or assemble things with wire instead of cutting it out of metal or what have you. But thankfully, even if I mess it up, it holds its value pretty well, so I can just scrap the gold or scrap the silver and start over. And that tends to happen a lot. If you're not able to deal with failure in jewelry, you are in the wrong business.
It's clear that Maggie Del Noce has a passion for what she does. Recently, she stepped away from a full-time job to put all her energy into selling her jewelry on Etsy, Instagram, through her website, and word of mouth through family and friends. And with a little luck, she'll make Olivine and Ivory a success.
I hope that I can do this enough to pay the bills and to make people happy and put positive energy back into the world. That's really all I can ask for, I suppose.
Coming up on Why So Weekend, we've got Bird Note to wrap up the program. Up first, Kettering officials have completed a draft of their comprehensive plan, which they say will shape the city's future growth, development, and quality of life for years to come. Now they want input from Kettering residents. WISO's Mike Frazier spoke with Kettering's city planner, Tom Robillard, about what the plan covers.
It's a long-term, forward-looking guide for the city that reflects our shared vision as a community and gives us a roadmap to how we want to achieve some of the goals that are outlined going forward in the future.
Can you briefly summarize some of those plans?
One is land use. One is regarding housing, the neighborhoods, economic development, parks and recreation, transportation, or what we call mobility. But also, we've identified five specific areas of Kettering that we want to focus in on over the next 5 years. These five shopping center areas, say, include the quadrant of Stroop and Marshall. It includes Woodman Shopping Center, which is Dorothy Lane and Woodman Drive area. Another one is Bigger Road and Whip Road area. Oh, and then Town and Country Shopping Center. We have a focused plan for how to redevelop those.
What challenges does an older suburb like Kettering face?
Yeah, that's a great question because Kettering is practically built out. So we have very, very little available greenfield or developable land. So it's how do we address the aging housing stock? How do we address aging shopping centers that are facing a lot of challenges from today's market? You know, we have a lot of vacant commercial space that's just no longer needed for commercial purposes. And so this plan is giving us ideas and a vision to go forward with. How do we redevelop older shopping centers, per se? And how do we preserve our neighborhoods for the next 20 years?
Now, what about residential challenges that the city is facing? What are your plans to help alleviate that? And what are some of those challenges, besides an aging housing stock?
Yes, it primarily has to do with basically an aging housing stock. The older homes that were built in Kettering, primarily in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, they're smaller. They're two-bedroom, one-bath, three-bedroom, one-bath, single-car garage with very little insulation, older appliances. They're much more expensive to own, even though they are more available to moderate-income or lower-income persons. So what do we do to make sure that that housing stock still stays functioning and is useful for the future? We have programs right now. But we're also examining what else can we do to help preserve our neighborhoods. So our tools are intended to help property owners reinvest in their properties in a good way so that it makes their house much more affordable, energy efficient, and sustainable for the long term.
Does the comprehensive plan address affordable housing and how the city might try to tackle that issue?
It directs us to identify other areas throughout the city that might be appropriate for higher density housing. And when I say higher density, that just doesn't mean apartments. It could mean ownership housing as well. It could mean townhomes. It could mean condominiums. It could mean apartments. Our comprehensive plan also directs us to look at accessory dwelling units and where they might be most appropriate and should we allow them in various parts of the city.
Can you explain that quickly, please?
Sure. So accessory dwelling units are typically a smaller unit, say an apartment unit, attached to your house, or it could be detached, that you could basically a granny flat is what they're also known for. In some areas of town, they might be appropriate. Some areas of town, they might not. But the comprehensive plan is directing us to look into that as a means to help address the affordable housing issues and achievability of housing. Kettering's a great place to live. It's a great place to raise kids. It's a great place to do business, and we want to keep it that way. As with anything, things change all the time. Properties need to be reinvested in, and this helps guide where we should concentrate our redevelopment and reinvestment efforts.
Kettering City Planner Tom Robillard speaking with WISO's Mike Frazier.
This is Bird Note. A typical house finch song has a raspy edge and tumbles forward in a jumbled series of notes. Especially during breeding season, the song has a sharp, buzzy note. Like at the end of this one. In parts of the United States, house finches overlap with similar-looking purple finches. Their distinct songs help us sort them out. Compared with house finch songs, purple finch songs are faster and roll along smoothly as a brisk series of warbled phrases. And purple finches don't throw in that sharp, buzzy note that tags many house finch songs. Purple finches in the West sing a little differently from those in the East. But these variations are much more similar to each other than to house finch songs. Let's listen again. House finch, jumbled. Purple finch, smooth. But both are music to the ears. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein. This episode is brought to you by Wild Delight Bird Food, which aims to support wild bird populations with clean, nutritious ingredients in every blend. Available at Chewy.com.
Bird Note, putting a wrap on this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Community-owned public radio for curious listeners. I'm Jerry Kenney. Well, stay curious. We've got more stories and highlights for you next weekend. Please join us then. This program is a podcast. You can download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Our theme music, Another Beautiful Day in Paradise, is provided by Magnolia Boldhead.